Chain. Google autocorrect. Changed her last name from Chan to Chain. I probably would have read it.
Are you good?
Yes.
Okay.
Are you?
Yeah.
Okay. Professional.
Hello and welcome to Board Games or Board Games, a podcast where my husband tries to keep my attention long enough to play board games and then I make him record podcasts about it. I'm Nina.
I'm Philip.
And this time we played Hanamikoji. Did I say it right?
Yes.
Okay. This one's actually pretty simple, so Philip's gonna tell us all about it.
Yeah. Okay. Hanamikoji was designed by Kota Nakayama with art by My Shirley Chan, first published in the United States in 2013 by Quick Simple Fun Games. So it's a two-player only game wherein each player is the owner of a traditional Japanese restaurant seeking to win the favor of the seven geisha in the game, but it's a very abstract, simple game, so the theme doesn't matter that much. Each geisha has a value. Three of them have a value of two. Two of them have a value of three, one has a value of four, and one has a value of five. Each of them also has that number of item cards that represent them. So the two value cards have two item cards, the five has five, and so on. Makes sense if you see the game. And normally I try not to describe the actual rules of the game to just go in depth, but in the case of Hanamikoji, it's actually pretty quick. So if you did all the math in your head really quick, that would make a total of 21. So there's a total of 21 item cards at the start of the game. And to start, you just put one unseen to either player back into the box to introduce an element of imperfect information. And then you deal six item cards to each player face down. And then the round starts with the first player drawing a card, and then they have to choose between one of four actions available to them, and they're all numbered. So one, you hide one card face down, and at the end of the round, it's going to be scored for you. Two, you hide two cards face down, and they will not be scored for anyone at the end of the round. Three, you choose an assortment of three cards, you reveal them. Your opponent gets to choose one card before you, and then they get to score that card, and you score the other two at the end of the round. And finally, four, you choose an assortment of four cards, and you split them into two pairs. Again, your opponent gets to choose first, and then you get the other pair, and all four of those cards will be scored at the end. Play alternates between each player, and each player draws a card at the beginning of their turns, and it all equals out to where, at the end of the game, you won't have any cards left. So once all the actions are done, you reveal the one hidden scored card, and you compare the number of item cards for each geisha, so the player that has the most item cards gains that geisha's favor. And there's a little token that you slide in that player's direction to indicate that. If neither of the two victory conditions are met, a new round starts with the geisha's favor token staying where they are, and a different random unseen item card going back into the box before you deal out six cards again. And that's pretty much the game. So, I don't know. Pretty hard to visualize, I'm sure. Look it up. But it's actually a very simple, quick game that takes like 10 minutes at most. And that's including setup.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
And when you said, it sounded weird when you said that they
the
have
value.
The value.
Yes,
of
I know. I was thinking that as I was saying but that. The cards have the value.
Yeah. What that really means is like you're winning them over with favors or whatever. Yeah. And so the value is the points that you
right.
get, not what you're like. Paying for right. them or whatever.
Yes, you're not. Yeah,
I made it sound a little odd, but
it's
anyway,
how the game's phrasing is.
Yes. Yeah. The setup, even just reading through and everything, it's like less than 5 minutes to set it up. It's. I mean, if you've played it several times, like Philip, it's like 30 seconds to
yeah.
to set up the game. So it's very very quick, especially when you know how to play. And then yeah, playing through can take. You know, about 10 minutes, maybe less. If you only have one round, especially we played this three times. We had one of the games where we played through two rounds because neither of us got enough points or whatever on the first round. So that one took a little bit longer. And we had played this one before, so it was kind of...
several years.
Yeah, but... I definitely didn't... I remembered the game, but I didn't remember anything about how to play it, so I did have to kind of relearn that. But yeah, it's so simple once you get into it. It's a little confusing when you're reading, when you're just reading the instructions, but again, kind of like once you start playing, it's pretty easy. Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think it's a, I mean, I can just dive right in. This is skipping ahead to the end. This is one of my favorite games. it's yeah, well, I can't really, it's hard to talk about it. So it's a very simple, easy to play game, but it's, you're kind of going to agonize over every decision. And for me, in a good way, like, it's just like, you, since you only do each action once, you have to really decide when that's the best action to choose. You're always dealing with, like I said, imperfect information, like from the very start, and then you don't know what cards your opponent has, what cards they've hidden, what cards they're going to reveal to you. I really like how it just, it's very neat in that there's, you know, you're playing with 20 cards, and then you have the four actions that you choose from, and the first card is, or the first action is one card, second action is two cards, and it all works out to where you have no cards to eat and once you're done.
So. Yeah, it is kind of satisfying that you just play every single card.
Yeah.
Also, when we played three times and I won all three times, which I took to mean as I'm good at winning over artsy chicks.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. But speaking of, like, the art, very, very pretty art.
Super pretty.
My Shirley Chan. I really like the art in this game.
It is very, very
pretty. The geisha cards are tarot sized, so it's, you get to appreciate the art a little bit better, too.
Philip said I looked like the librarian one with the scroll.
She has glasses.
And also a scroll, always with me. And after the first game we played, I wrote down this quote. Philip said, "You super beat me." So
I think I had like two on my side or something.
It was enjoyable. I think what's cool about it is you can play it kind of differently every time. So obviously it's going to depend on what your starting hand is. And then, you know, I don't think I started the same way any of the times we played as far as like which action I did first, because there's only four really turns that you take. So I think I did a different one first each time, which is kind of interesting. So it's like, it's not like the technique is set in stone for how to win. I think I definitely play a little more fast and loose than Philip, which isn't surprising.
Seems to work out.
But yeah, it did seem to work out for me. But like, it's kind of fun because you can kind of just experiment. Like on the last game we played, I started with the four cards, so the two sets of two, and your opponent gets to pick the two first, and I put out two sets of the same two cards, so we kind of started out completely even, and I don't know, it's kind of cool how you can just do different things. Like, it's so simple, but you can make it pretty different each time you play.
Yeah, it's kind of like Go or Chess. I mean, I'm not saying it's as good as those games, but both of those games are very simple mechanically, but they... like, you know, they lead to very complex decisions.
It's basically like chess. Like, yeah, I pretty much just beat
you. You could be a grandmaster.
I'm pretty much a grandmaster chess.
But yeah, it's good. I don't know. I like how, like, you know, the twos are worthless, but they're easier to get, obviously. So you can go that route and try to get the lower value cards and probably have an easier time doing that. But or you can try to risk a little bit more and go for the fives, even though each individual item card when you're going for five is worth less. So yeah,
I can't remember, did I win by points every time, or was there one time where I just won by getting four?
I don't remember you winning by getting four.
Yeah, I
don't
know. I feel like I won by points.
Maybe you did, but I don't know.
So maybe it's easier to win that way. I will say also, just kind of a neat thing about this game, if you're kind of a novice board game player or card game player or whatever, it's kind of just a nice like stepping stone into more complicated games, because it's so simple. You can just play it, you know, it's just two people, so you just need one other person. If you have a friend or a significant other, and it's, you know, if you want something you can play really quickly, so you're not devoting your whole evening to it unless you just want to play it over and over again, but you can do that and it's still fun. So like you can play it multiple times in a row and it's still fun to play. And so it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of more like a card game in that way, because you know, like when you play like Speed or whatever, you can play it multiple times and you can both win some, or one person wins all of them. But
it's just like chess and just like Speed.
But either, yeah, it's basically the same of chess and Speed. But it's an easy kind of, if you're just looking for something a little bit more than Speed.
Yeah, and like for me, where I like slightly more complex games, like I still get the whole satisfaction out of making difficult decisions when playing this. So yeah. And also I think something that sometimes turns you off, Nina, is like really doing things against your opponent and attacking, you know. In this game you're not doing anything against them. You're here, choose from these cards that I'm offering you. Yeah. So things like that.
I do like that. I like that because it's not like we've talked about before where you're just basically playing your own stuff. Like you're still playing against someone. You still have to think about like what might that person be hiding, you know, and then you're thinking, okay, there's five cards for this one and I know I have two of them, but maybe they hid one, or maybe they, you know, maybe one's in the box. Like, so you still have to think about what the other player's doing, but not in like a vicious or aggressive way.
And then the other thing I love about it too is like, it's as far as what cards you're going to end up scoring with, like the cards you start with, you only get to have direct control over scoring one of them, because, you know, otherwise you have to have your opponent not choose the cards that you want to score or something like that. So you have to like decide like how to arrange them to make what you don't want them to pick appealing to them or something. So yeah, even that, like they're still kind of influencing what you'll end up scoring. So yeah. Just the fact that you only directly choose one of them is nice of your own cards.
Yeah, it makes it interesting. It's very approachable. Is there anything we don't like about this game?
I don't think so. I mean, I guess some it's people... Perfect. No, I mean, I don't know. Some people might think the whole theme of attracting geisha by giving them stuff, which I don't really think that's the theme that they're going for. I don't know, but... Because it's just talking about their favor and things like that. And you know,
they're supposed to be like artists,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
like that's the whole.
Yes, it's, I think it says in the manual that like for purpose of this game, like you can think of the word geisha as a translation for artist. But we're getting into things where I don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So
moving on.
Yeah, but.
But it's, yeah, I don't think I have.
No, I have no complaints about it.
Yeah. Yeah. So. So best game ever or worst game ever?
Yeah, best game ever for me, definitely. I would note I have not played any of them, but this is like the first, I think based on like how well this game did, this publisher has a line of games that's supposed to be kind of similar weight and time, and I need to look into them. And before we started recording, there's actually apparently a kind of a spiritual sequel that's getting released this year called Geisha's Road, and that it's Hana Mikoji Geisha's Road, I think.
So what is a spiritual sequel? What does that mean?
It's games that kind of evoke the same feelings but don't necessarily share the exact same mechanics, okay. That sort of thing, I guess. In this case, the sequel does not share the same designer, so I'm not quite as excited about it as I would be if it was the same designer, but I still want to look into it.
Interesting. So, best game ever.
Yes.
I think we're both going to say, since we have found no faults.
I mean, it's not going to scratch every itch, but for what it does, it's very, very good at it.
Yeah, definitely highly recommended for a newbie... gamer people who just want something new to play that's not overly complicated, and don't be intimidated by the instructions, because sometimes it seems more complicated. I'm finding out as we play more games that sometimes it seems more complicated than it actually is when you start playing.
And I did not actually look into this, but I'm sure this is one where you could find a YouTube video that would fully explain the game within like 5 minutes at most.
That's true. If that's a better learning experience for you, that doesn't really work that well for me, but for you, listener. Okay. So,
I think
anything
that's
else?
It from me.
Any last thoughts? No.
No.
All right. So, for today's bonus segment, in which we talk kids games and or family games and or anything else in the future we feel like talking about, and you have to listen, it's the law. I wanted to take a little bit of time to talk about Kerplunk by Mattel. So if you, like me, had a sad and deprived childhood and never got to own or play Kerplunk, you could just watch those commercials and think about how fun it would be to pull those sticks out. It's still pretty fun, even if you get it as an adult. So my mom brought it over recently, and we all played it together. Our six-year-old very much enjoyed it, and we also had some older kids over for something recently, and they sat there and they played it with our six-year-old for over an hour.
Very nice of them.
Yes, they're super nice kids anyway, but it was like magic. And the hardest part is getting the sticks in at the beginning of the game. I was looking on Amazon to see what the age rating is, which is 5+. And all the reviews are like, it's not as sturdy as it used to be. I can't get the sticks in. I cannot get the sticks in. So yes, fair warning. If you have a younger kid, it's hard to get the sticks in, and they, like, our kid could not get all of the sticks in, maybe the first couple, but it gets pretty tricky to get the sticks all the way across through both holes. But once you do that and then you put the marbles in, obviously it's a pretty easy game. Our 2-year-old can play it pretty much. So it's really simple, but it's still really fun. And it's, you know, my mom had a blast. Our 6-year-old had a lot of fun seeing if she could set it up to where the marbles were slightly balanced to where my mom would drop all the marbles when she pulled one out. So it was really fun. Definitely recommend if you've forgotten about that game or you never got to play it. And then I just also, while I'm talking about Kerplunk, wanted to give a quick note about Yeti and My Spaghetti by Playmonster, which, if you haven't seen, is basically, by the way, I didn't even really tell you what Kerplunk is. I'm assuming you know what Kerplunk is. So if you don't, go look up a picture. Pretty much explains it. But Yeti and My Spaghetti is basically the same concept. It's just plastic spaghetti over a bowl, and then you put the Yeti on top, and then you pull the spaghetti out, and whoever drops the Yeti loses. So, sounds great.
Not as satisfying.
It's not. It's really not as good. I think it's supposed to be like a more modern version of Kerplunk, and I guess it's rated for a younger age. So Yeti and My Spaghetti says it's for 4-year-olds as opposed to the wisdom of 5-year-olds for Kerplunk. But like the spaghetti and the bowl are kind of dumb. Like it doesn't go together any better than putting the sticks in the holes of Kerplunk. And our kids never really liked it. The Yeti itself is very cute. And he's kind of in this little like pose because like falling backwards, right, which is, you know, adorable. And he looks cute, but it's just real cheap plastic. And that's, I mean,
it's
so
kind
is
of sitting
plunk,
loosely
but,
on the bowl from what I remember.
Yeah. It's like the spaghetti just kind of, it sits there, and then, and also you pull like 3 spaghettis and then he falls basically. Huh. It's a harder game. So my recommendation there, obviously, is skip Yeti and My Spaghetti and go for the classic Kerplunk. If you want something where you're pulling a thing out from under another thing and then seeing if that second thing falls. There's probably more of those, I bet you. but those are the two we have.
Yep. Don't think we need any more.
Also, the box. I hate kids' games boxes. They drive me nuts. The box for Yeti and My Spaghetti, because they wanted to display the Yeti, has a big hole in it. So that's real dumb. And then for Kerplunk, like, you put, sorry, you put the thing together, the tube part, right? And then, like, you can't really, I mean, I guess you can probably take it apart, but it's kind of hard. So I just shoved it back in the box. But just, like, and then there's just loose marbles in there because there's nothing, there's no bag or anything to put the marbles in.
Just, like, set the game up and put it on the shelf, ready to go.
Yeah, I guess. If at the end of playing, you want to stick all the sticks back in. But the marbles won't stay in there without the sticks being in there, obviously.
I know. That's what I meant. I don't
know. Yeah. So, no. So basically we need a marble bag or something to go in the Kerplunk box, but right now the marbles are just rolling around loose in that box. That's a little annoying. Okay. Just thinking about it.
All right.
And so the
there's a lot to talk about
the
Kerplunk.
Plastic piece, like, makes the box wider, and so then it doesn't close all the way and the marbles can roll out. Okay, I'm done. What do you need to say about it, Philip?
Nothing, but that's a big thing that gamers hate, poor quality boxes.
Yeah, so. Which I guess for kids games, it's just yeah. no one cares. So yeah. They're just like, whatever, we're just going to use this terrible box.
Yep, except for Hoppe. Like, that's the animal upon animal.
Yeah, they're still just boxes, but they're at least like well-made boxes.
Right size,
they're the right size and they're like sturdy boxes.
They have a lid.
They're not super flimsy.
Anyway,
and that's all I have to say about that. Any final thoughts about anything?
Nope, none for me.
Okay, so if you haven't found us already, if you're listening to this, you can find us on Twitter or Instagram at BorderBoardPod, BORD or BORED pod, or you can email us your questions and comments and suggestions at boardorboardpod@gmail.com. BORD or BORED pod @gmail. Phil looks like he wants to laugh when I talk about.
We have a third host today. There's a fly buzzing around that you might hear. I don't know.
I don't think you'll hear it. Anyway. Let us know in the comments. If you can hear the fly, tweet at us if you can hear the fly in this episode. Also, I think that's all, actually.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, keep on playing.
Good night.
Good night.